Earlier this year, BBC Radio Stoke appealed for your help to try and solve a World War I mystery. A mystery which researchers at the Ministry of Defence couldn't solve alone, even after 3 years of working on it. This was a century-old mystery, which needed solving if one brave soldier from Staffordshire was to be remembered for his sacrifice. In the next half an hour, you're going to hear the remarkable story of how we join together the pieces of one man's life from his birth in Stoke-on-Trent more than a century ago to his time in the British Army on the battlefields of the First World War.
We're trying to solve a World War I mystery which goes all the way back to the 1st of October 1918.
We've done research in the last couple of years, and we then established clear and convincing that James is buried in this unknown grave. And it's marvellous that now we can afford him what he deserves so much.
To begin with, James was illegitimate, so that put off a whole side of his family. Not knowing who his father was meant I could only search for his mother's family.
I feel like we must track down his descendants so they can go to the ceremony.
We've come together to give thanks for the life of Sergeant James Joseph McLinn. Now identified, we remember his life, devotion and ultimate sacrifice.
Never ever been mentioned at all in the family, so we had no idea, it just came out of the blue.
They shall grow not old, as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun, and in the morning, we will remember them.
It's summer 1914, and the world is on the brink of war.
I believe when the country realizes what is at stake, what the real issues are, the magnitude of the impending dangers in the west of Europe, which I have endeavoured to describe to the House, we shall be supported throughout not only by the House of Commons, but by the determination, the resolution, the courage, and the endurance of the whole country.
James Joseph McLinn was like so many of the men who joined the war effort after that speech in Parliament by Sir Edward Grey, Foreign Secretary, in August 1914. James was born into a working-class family in 1896 and lived with his mother and sister in a red brick terrace house in Cobridge. In 1915, with the war already a year in, he was working in the pottery industry as a young crepe maker. Many of the men around him had already left to fight. So it was in 1915 that he signed up with the 4th Battalion North Staffordshire Regiment. Aged just 19 years, he wasn't conscripted though, he chose to fight for his king and country.
Johnny, get your gun, get your gun, get your gun. Take it on the run, on the run, on the run. Hear them calling you and me, every son of liberty.
After years on the home front training with his regiment and moving up the ranks, he was sent to the Western Front in 1917. James joined up to defend his country, but wouldn't have really known what awaited him in the trenches. After the horrors of the bloody Battle of Passchendaele earlier that year, troops were feeling the strain of 3 years at war. When James arrived, soldiers and officers were demoralised by months of fighting, heavy losses, and not being any closer to an end being in sight to the conflict. The Staffords, the Cheshire Regiment, and the Sherwood Foresters, with other Allied forces, were sitting patiently waiting, preparing to capture ground from the Germans, not knowing when the orders to go over the top would be given. In late September, those orders were eventually given, and it was during this attempt to bring the conflict to an end that James sadly died during fighting near the town of Zandvoort in Belgium on the 1st of October 1918, tragically just 41 days before armistice was signed and the war was brought to an end. He was still only 22 at the time and was killed along with eight other men. Sadly, it was believed, like millions of soldiers on both sides, that his body was never recovered from the battlefield. There were, after all, millions of men in the 2,500 miles of trenches that were dug across France and Belgium. Sometimes men were being buried in makeshift graves where they fell. Some had just been left where they were killed, many of them unidentifiable. It was thought that this was the case for Sergeant McLean. But this year, almost a century later, the Ministry of Defence found what they called clear and convincing evidence that he was actually buried soon after his death, but never as James, but instead as an unknown sergeant of the 4th Battalion North Staffordshire Regiment. His body's been lying at the Zandvoort British Cemetery in Belgium, but without his name on the headstone, it's meant that for 99 years, no one has known it was his grave. Despite knowing so much about his time at war, it quickly became clear that since he was killed in 1918, no one really knew who Sergeant McLean was or had remembered him since. That's why the MOD contacted BBC Radio Stoke back in July to help trace any of his living relatives who might just have heard of James and known more of his sacrifice. So over the next 30 minutes, we're going to bring you an emotional journey of how we began to remember McLean on BBC Radio Stoke. Sue Raftery is from the Joint Casualty and Compassionate Centre at the Ministry of Defence.
We've done research in the last couple of years with the regimental museums, with the National Army Museum, all the records that the Commonwealth War Graves have to hand. And we then established clear and convincing that in actual fact, James is buried in this unknown grave. And it's marvellous that now we can afford him what he deserves so much. There are an awful lot of unknown soldiers, as you'll appreciate, that were killed in the First World War. And a lot of them were buried as unknown soldiers. And this was just highlighted to us in 2014. It's one of many cases that we have, and we have researched it in depth, and we have to make sure that everything is correct and that we have the right person. He will never be exhumed. He will stay where he is. He will just have a headstone put on the grave, and it will say his details and a personal inscription from his family.
Sue also told us more about what they had already discovered about James' death and how they worked out that it was, in fact, his grave.
We know that on the day that he died, the 1st of October 1918, that there were 9 from his regiment, the 4th Battalion, North Staffordshire, who were killed. And looking at the references and the documentation, we know that they were predominantly privates, which were a lower rank, and one lance sergeant, and the lance sergeant has a known grave, and the only person missing from his regiment on that day is James, so therefore we know that it's definitely him. We know his mother was Agnes, and also living at the house was Mary, his sister, who when he died in 1918 was 25 years old. Whether he had more family, we don't know. He could have had cousins who lived in the area. Somebody hopefully will know them and where they are now and be able to contact us. But if not, we will try our hardest to try and, with your help, which we're very grateful for, to find them.
So he was unmarried, had no children, and all that anyone knew of him was his mother's name, Agnes McLean. But just to make things a little bit more complicated, his mother was actually born Bridget and changed her name at some point. We knew that he had one older sister, Mary. And when James left his home and job to join the army, the family lived at 375 Waterloo Road in Cobridge. Potteries historian Fred Hughes told us more about what Stoke-on-Trent was like at the outbreak of war and as it went on. He said it all happened so quickly.
Within days, you didn't even realise it because it was out of your arena. Suddenly a war was round. It just happened to the ordinary people, the pottery workers and the miners. You know, you could have just imagined the fright, but we're still Victorian Britain and we've got to fight for Britain, you see. And of course, once they started to recruit straight from the factory floors, Stoke-on-Trent, like everywhere else, started to lose much of its workforce. But at least they were, in one way, they were getting out of Stoke.